We want to look this morning at the credible Christ. We looked at the incredible Christ a couple of weeks back, and I just sent the wrong PowerPoint to him. As we look at that, the passage that was just read is going to be an important part of that, and some other passages as well. Before I do that, I wanted to mention one thing. A couple of weeks ago, there was a special contribution for the Rain Tree Village, and wanted to let everyone know there was $500 was collected and sent to them. So appreciate everyone who donated to that good work, and know that your efforts are not in vain. That money will be used for good things there, I'm sure. When we think about, and we talked about a little bit when we talked about the incredible Christ, how the word incredible has kind of changed its meaning. It literally meant, and the dictionary definition of incredible is something that is not believable. And yet we use it, of course, to say something's incredible just because it's amazing or it's shocking or stunning in some way. But on the other side of that is the credible Christ. He was incredible because he was amazing and shocking. Unfortunately, some people don't believe. And so we want to talk about him as being credible. It's been said that there are basically four options that we can deal with Christ. We can proclaim that he's a myth man, nothing but a myth. We can claim that he's a madman, that he was just crazy, and he really believed that he was all of these things, but he was just out of his mind. We could believe that he's a bad man, that he intentionally deceived people into believing that he was something that he wasn't, that he was the Son of God and the Messiah, when in fact he was just a man. Or we can believe that he is the God-man, that he is God come down in the flesh and become a man. Unfortunately, the one thing that is not available to us is the one that an awful lot of people in the world try to choose. And that is that he's a good man. That won't work. I'm sorry, but a good man would not claim to be something that he was not. A good man would not proclaim that he was doing miracles by the power of God and that he had come from heaven to earth and was returning back to heaven if he wasn't. That's not a good man. Now, did he live a good life? Yes. But he's not just a good man. If he's not more than a man, then he is not good. So we want to consider these things then. This Christ that we worship and serve, that we've named the church after, not that we named it, but that the Scriptures talk about the church that belongs to the Christ, to the kingdom of His dear Son. When we think about these things, we think about the fact that Christianity is a faith that's rooted in events that took place 2,000 years ago. That's a long time. And there are a lot of things about 2,000 years ago that we don't know. And so there are some that will proclaim that, well, we've got all these stories about this Jesus, but he's not real. It was just made up stories. They'll say it's a fairy tale. It's a myth. That there were people who, kind of like, you know, the story of Cinderella, kind of it's a cute story and it has a good point to it. Or maybe Aesop's Fables. I mean, we don't really think that those animals talked and stuff, but there's a good moral to the story. And some people say that, well, what do you know? Wow. Miracles never cease, is that the sentence? But was Jesus a myth? Okay, we found ourselves. Okay. As we consider whether he was a myth, we consider that there were those who lived during his time. And that would make a difference. Did they write anything? Did they record anything? Or were these just stories made up to tell a point. And the characters don't really matter. They're not really important. And that's the idea of a myth. We have a lot of stories like that in our world. Fables, fairy tales. We know that they're not based on real people. But then a step up from the myth is the legend. And the legend is kind of this idea that, well, it's based on true facts, but the true facts have been embellished. There have been things added to it. And we might think about the stories about King Arthur and Camelot. You know, we've found that yes, there's some fact to the fact that there was a king back in the old days of Britain that did some things that were considered great. But a magician named Merlin, we have to wonder about. A sword and a stone, all these kinds of things. We say, that's embellished. Even in our own history, George Washington chopping down the cherry tree and telling his father, I cannot tell a lie. And you know, there are a lot of things where we say, well, it's true, that was a real person, but they've kind of had things added to their story. And a lot of people believe that about Jesus, that he was just a man, and all of these other things that are added to it are way, way beyond what we're expected to really believe. And then there are those things that we call history. And a historical story, of course, is one that's rooted and based in facts. That we know that the people were real. We know that these actually were things that they did. And in some history, of course, there's some bias and there's some slanting of the story. But we believe that it's a factual account. So as we think about those three possibilities, and we're going to dig into each of those a little more deeply. First, we want to dig into the idea of Jesus being a myth. We want to look at that one first. So, you know, was Jesus a myth? Well, the claim that Jesus never lived is kind of a new one. It's odd that no one around the time of Christ, or even in the century or so after Christ's time, ever made this claim. And yet, oddly enough, it would have been the greatest claim that the opponents to Christianity could have made, wouldn't it? I mean, to say, you're basing your whole religion on some guy and he didn't even ever live. That'd be a pretty good attack, wouldn't it? And yet the people of that day and age didn't use that attack. I think there's a reason they didn't use that attack. They knew he lived. He was a historical being. It'd be kind of like us today telling people, oh, well, George Washington, he never lived. Well, we know he lived. We have letters. I've been to visit at the house that he lived in Mount Vernon. I mean, of course he lived. Now, are some of the stories that are told about him maybe a little different thing. But we know he lived. We know he was a president of our country. We know these things. So it wasn't really until our not this century, but the last, the 20th century, was the first time that people really started to spout this idea, oh, well, Jesus never lived. It became a part of basic education in Russia to say that, well, there was this communist uprising in the Roman world, and they just tried to explain it away by making up this guy named Jesus. An Englishman by the name of G.A. Wells, not to be confused with the famous H.G. Wells, I don't know what he believed on the matter, but this G.A. Wells insists that Paul made Jesus up to validate his own religion. So basically that Christianity is really Paulism, and Paul just made Jesus up as a way of deceiving people. Of course, the problem there is people were talking about and writing about and telling about Jesus before Paul became a Christian. So that's a bit of a problem there. Of course, to believe that Jesus is a myth, that he never lived, would mean that we'd have to throw out the whole New Testament. We'd have to throw it all out. Nothing in it would be of any value to us. Nothing would be true. It's just a group of fairy tales concocted by some creative writers. The Gospels would be fabrications. Nothing in them would be true. There were no eyewitnesses. There was no crucifixion. Jesus didn't teach any parables. He didn't do any miracles. He never lived. It'd basically just be Cinderella all over again. But is there evidence? Because yes, in fact, saying he didn't exist would mean throwing out some secular history as well. If you picked up one of the pages that's out on the table on the Credible Christ, you'll find that on the bottom of that front page is a quote by Flavius Josephus. Now, Flavius Josephus was not a Christian. So we can discount right away that he's biased because, well, he's a believer in this Jesus, so that's why he says these things. He was a Jewish historian. And he was writing to the Romans about the Jewish history. And in one of his volumes, he says, "There was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men among us, had condemned him to the cross, those who loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him, and the tribe of Christians so named for him are not extinct at this day." Now you would think after saying something as glowing as that, Josephus himself would have become a Christian. But he says, without a doubt, this Jesus lived. And he mentions those who were with him and saw him. He mentions him being condemned to the cross and Pilate. And he mentions some facts about the events that took place. He actually mentions Jesus another time in the Antiquities. We won't look at that one. But we also hear from some of the rabbinical writings, the rabbis of the first 2 centuries after Jesus, who, again, were Jewish people. They weren't Christians. They weren't followers of Christ. They were Jewish people. In fact, they said some kind of nasty things about Jesus, which you would expect coming from some enemies. But interestingly enough, they never claimed he didn't live. What they say is, in the Jewish lives, we're told of these things about Jesus. He was the illegitimate son of a Roman soldier. His mother's name was Mary, and she was a woman's hairdresser. He was a revolutionary, and he scoffed at the words of the wise. He worked miracles by means of magic brought out of Egypt. He was a heretic who sinned and caused the multitude to sin, and he led astray and deceived Israel. He was about 33 years old when he was put to death. One thing, however, that they didn't say was that he never lived. They tried to demean his character. They tried to lie about how Mary gave birth to him. They say these things, but they never tried to deny his existence. And even most atheists today don't deny the existence of Jesus. They just deny that he was who he claimed to be. There are others outside of the Jewish realm. There are pagans who also gave evidence for Jesus. Tacitus, around 115 AD, said that Christ was executed in Judea under Pontius Pilate during the reign of Tiberius. Thallus, around AD 52, said that it got dark at the crucifixion of Christ. He tried to explain that away as an eclipse of the sun, which is a great story. I mean, we know of eclipses. That's not a new thing. So, wow, yeah, it was just an eclipse. The only problem is, the studying I did of it, the longest eclipse ever recorded was about 10 minutes of darkness. The darkness at the crucifixion of Christ lasted for 3 hours. That's not just an eclipse. It doesn't work that way. Suetonius, Pliny, and Lucian, and other writers from the 2nd century mention Jesus as the founder of the group known as the Christians. See, if Jesus had not lived, what better fact could they have presented than, hey, this guy's a fake. He didn't ever live. But when you take a look at their references, they take for granted that he lived and that he died. Now they may debate about and call him a blasphemer, a troublemaker, all sorts of things, but they never believed that he wasn't a real person. So that brings us to our next question. Was Jesus a legend? If he was just, even if he was a real person, are the things that are written about him true? I mean, I could, and maybe some people would say I have in some of our bulletin articles about getting to know you, and pick one of those up. We've got a thing in there about our sister Helen Curry, who just passed away this week. But some people say, yeah, I kind of embellished the truth a little bit on some of those events of people's lives. So is that what happened? Did the gospel writers, for example, you know, they just thought this would be a really neat thing to add in there, and they just added some things in there? Well, some people certainly claim that that's the case. If so, if there's a layer of truth and that's just been covered over with these stories that didn't happen, how would we know how to separate out the fact from the fiction? That'd be a problem, wouldn't it? How would we pick and choose in the Gospels what's real and what they made up and added in and embellished? There was a group of people back in the 70s, 60s and 70s that tried to do that. They sat down with passages from the Bible and the sayings of Jesus from the Bible, and they voted on whether they thought that one was real or not. That doesn't work too well, because we weren't there. And we can't just say, well, this can't be true. Thomas Jefferson tried that as well. Thomas Jefferson has a version of the Gospels where he went through and he removed all of the miraculous events. Because he thought, that can't happen. People can't walk on water. People can't raise people from the dead. People can't heal somebody who's been blind all their life. Well, that can't happen, so we'll just get that out of there. And so he edited the miraculous events out of the Bible and left the teachings. The problem is, the teachings of Christ fall flat without the miraculous to give them their power, to give them their authority. If he's just a guy who said some things, then we don't have to obey that. We can pick and choose. We can take out the things that we don't like, the hard sayings, where he called people to do things that really challenged them, and we say, well, I don't want to do that, so he didn't ever really say that one. And we just mark that one out. You finally may get down to a kernel of material that you say, this is really it. This is the real historical facts. And when you get there, you don't have enough left to matter anymore if you try to do that. If you try to pick away at everything that's there. And then there are also, in this idea of the legend area, is the idea that there are alternatives to the gospel accounts. There are other gospels. You sometimes will hear the lost gospels or the lost books of the Bible. Recently, one of the big ones was the Gospel of Judas. Well, you don't expect that one to be a complimentary volume, do you? I mean, this is the guy who turned Jesus... And his argument throughout it is, you know, Jesus was a liar. He was a fraud. He was deceiving us. And so I had to turn him in for the good of everybody. You know, I was the good guy. And these alternatives, and there are several of them out there. Problem is, when we actually get to looking at them and dating them and looking at the language that was used in them, you know how we can kind of tell what age somebody is and when they grew up by certain words and phrases that they use? So, if you like to say that things are cool, you probably grew up like in the 80s. If you like to say that things are groovy, you probably grew up in the 60s. You know, we have these words that change over time. And so when we examine the text of these writings, what we find out is they weren't written back in the first century. They were written 150 or 200 or 300 years afterwards. They weren't written by the guys that saw the events and that were there, because they used different language. Language changes, doesn't it? Now, remember when Coke was just something you drank and grass was just something that you mowed? Christian still mows grass, but a lot of other people do other things with grass. You know, but things change because language changes. And so we can know some of those things about the way these things are laid out because of things they say. But these writings that came out in the 2nd and 3rd century, they make up new events in the life of Christ, things that weren't known before. Jesus makes a dried up fish live. Jesus turns his friends into pigeons. I mean, you know, just Jesus as a baby just started talking as a newborn baby. You know, all kinds of things that are in there. He kills a boy because the boy accidentally bumps into him. And the boy's parents complain, and so he strikes them blind. And yet John tells us that the first miracle Jesus did was when he turned the water to wine at the marriage feast in Cana of Galilee. And he was already 30 years old when he did that. All these little miracles that he did when he was a kid, that's things that people added in later. And we can know that because, well, they were written later. They have new sayings, like in the Gospel of Thomas, which was actually, well, that's a big one. The Gospel of Thomas. It was written in the 5th century, 400 years after Jesus. Can you imagine? 400 years later, somebody writes your life story? How accurate do you think they'd be? Not very, probably. Here's one quote. Simon Peter said to them, "Let Mary go away from us, for women are not worthy of life." I could almost imagine Peter saying something like that. Peter's good about sticking his foot in his mouth. But Jesus said, "Lo, I shall lead her, so that I may make her a male, that she too may become a living spirit, resembling you males. For every woman who makes herself a male will enter the kingdom of heaven." What? Gospel of Thomas was preaching transgenderism long before our century. Amazing. But, you know, these are the kinds of crazy stories that are in there. And we think, well, there's some pretty wild stories in the originals. Yeah, by people who were there and saw it happen. You know, I've heard some stories that people tell, and if there wasn't evidence from the fact that it actually happens, and actually happened, and they, you know, I wouldn't believe some of the things. You've probably had some things happen in your life that you think, if I told somebody that, if they would they believe me? There are a lot of things that happen in this world that are pretty amazing and sometimes difficult to believe. I know a young man who was shot between 10 and 15 times and survived at once. I mean, at the same time. Somebody shot him 10 to 15, I don't remember the exact counts, 12 or 13, something like that. Shot him that many times and it didn't kill him. I don't know how that happened. But he survived it. You know another fella who was in a car wreck, broke his neck, and was walking around. He was a young man, college age kid. He was walking around, he was playing with the younger kids. And when the doctors finally examined him, they said he shouldn't even be alive, much less walking around. I don't know how. But these things can happen that are out of the ordinary and that we wouldn't believe. Maybe not miraculous necessarily even, but just amazing. So there are a lot of different stories out there. A lot of alternatives to the Gospels that we have in the Scripture. But they're just that, alternatives. They're full of alternative facts instead of the actual facts. But if we take the Gospels as history, if we believe they were written by those men who were there and who saw those things, It's not because we are ignorant or superstitious or something like that, but it's because they give us evidence that they are historical accounts. The Gospels are based on eyewitness accounts. John 19:35, John himself says, "I'm the one that saw this. I was there." And when we think about what he says he saw, we have to realize that he was not just talking about one event. He was with Jesus the whole time. He saw all of those things. He says, "The person who saw it has testified, and his testimony is true, and he knows what he is telling, that he is telling the truth, so that you also may believe." And John wasn't the only one. Matthew was also there. Peter was there. Others were there and saw these events take place. Matthew was written by a tax collector who became a follower of Jesus and one of his apostles. Mark is likely written based on some preaching by Peter. Peter himself says in 2 Peter, "We did not follow cleverly devised tales when we made known to you the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but we were eyewitnesses of His majesty." Peter was there on that Mount of Transfiguration when Jesus glowed and Moses and Elijah appeared and talked with them. And he was there. He saw it. Even though Luke himself was not one who had been there and seen things in his own, he does explain in Luke chapter 1, "Many have undertaken to compile an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, like the accounts passed on to us by those who were eyewitnesses and servants of the word from the beginning. So it seemed good to me as well, because I have followed all these things carefully from the beginning, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus." Luke says, I didn't see it, but the people who did, I'm organizing these things. I'm putting it in order so that you can have it. And of course, 1 John 1 through 3 that we was just read earlier, where John says, "We saw it, we touched, he was real. Jesus was there. He was in the flesh. The life of all was here. We saw him. We touched him." There's no doubt about it. We know what we saw. We know what we heard. You probably could have said we smelled him as well. Four of the five senses there that he could have made reference to. So certainly, the Gospels are eyewitness accounts. And they are the most ancient accounts that we have of Jesus. They were written the first within about 30 years of his death, and the last some 60 to 70 years later, by people who were there, who lived in that time. The other reconstructions of Christ's life happened hundreds of years later. So we can trust the Gospels. They are full of people that we know existed from sources outside the New Testament. Luke chapter 3 and verse 1 is a good example of that. In Luke 3 and verse 1, he says, "In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, and Herod the tetrarch of Galilee, and his brother Philip was tetrarch of the region of Etruria and Trachonitis, and Licinius was tetrarch of Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of the Lord came to John, the son of Zechariah, in the wilderness." mean, you think about what he's listed a whole bunch of people that you can check historically to see if those people are real. In fact, it's been said that Luke, if he wasn't telling a factual, accurate, historical account of things, was really in trouble. Because time and again, he mentions people, he mentions places, he mentions events, he mentions things that can be checked historically with other documents outside the New Testament. And you know what we found out? Every time that somebody's tried to check up on Luke, the good doctor, you know what they found? He was right. Even at times where he uses terminology, people say, wait, that wasn't right. Surely no, they didn't use that terminology. They have discovered, archaeology has come up with some more evidence that says, oh, you know what? Guess we were wrong. That was a word that was used back then in certain places. These things that are constantly confirmed by archaeology. We know about the census that was taken. We know when these people were living and when they built certain things, and when, you know, they're like a lot of our politicians. They built something, they put their name on it. They wanted to brag about it. And so we have all sorts of engravings of these kinds of things. Archaeology has shown over and over again that these things, the Pool of Bethesda, the Garden of Gethsemane, the Praetorium, all of these things have been identified. They've all been shown where they were, that they were real places. Inscriptions of Herod and Pilate and Licinius and all of these other folks, they're there. They're all there. But what else is interesting is that they all abound in the detail of first century life. Have you ever seen how hard it is when someone tries to write a story about a time or a culture or a place that they're not familiar with? I mean, it's kind of laughable sometimes. I mean, take even one of the great playwright Shakespeare. He has a clock gonging in one of his plays that was set in the time of the Roman Empire. Oops. They didn't have gonging clocks back then. But he didn't know that. He has those Greek and Roman people and various ones speaking in 16th century British English grammar. I know he did that for his audience, but still, it doesn't work that way. The Gospels, you see in the Gospels things that fit with a culture that's different from the culture now or the culture here or other cultures at other times. You see them talking about vineyards that are surrounded by hedges and guarded by towers and fig trees that need cultivation and herbs like mint and rue and all of these different tares and grass and all of these different things. You see them talking about the kinds of animals that they had there in that land. You don't hear them talking about animals that were only, you don't read about kangaroos. You don't read about possums. They don't have those over there. They have those in Australia and here that we have. So the things fit. There's so much about how business was conducted and about how different things happened. The commonness of the beggars begging on the side of the road. And all of these kinds of things are evidence that this fits with the society that they lived in. But most of all, in the Gospels, we have our richest source of information about Jesus. And that's what they're really about. The other things, the history, the things archaeology has proved, all the different things, those are nice, and they're kind of indications that they're true accounts. But what we really go to the Gospels for is not the history, not the culture, not the government of Rome and information about it. What we really go to the Gospels to see is, what about this Jesus of Nazareth? He was real. And the richest source that we have is right there for us. Four different accounts of his life written within the lifetimes of the men who were with him, so that if one of those accounts was faulty, some of those who lived with him could have said, that's not true. That didn't happen. Interestingly enough, even his enemies didn't spend a lot of time trying to say, hey, that account's not, that's not right. They didn't even try. Because they knew. Because they were there too. They saw the same things. They didn't believe it, but they saw it. Jesus really lived on this earth. He lived a perfect, sinless life, as is accounted in the Gospels. And he died a death he didn't deserve. He was buried. 3 days later, he rose. If that weren't the case, Christianity's enemies could have just drug his body out of the tomb and said, look, here it is. And Christianity would have been just as dead as that body. It wasn't a body to dig out or to pull out. Our faith is not a blind faith. It's a faith based on credible evidence that leads us to credible conclusions. If you're here and you have not put your faith in Jesus Christ, there is no one else that ever has or ever will come to this earth and die for your sins. If you have not believed in Him and not been willing to repent of your sins and confess Him as the Christ, be buried with Him in baptism to wash those sins away. You need to do that. If you are a Christian, but perhaps the doubts, and we all do from time to time, doubts come into our mind. Satan wants us to doubt. But if you've allowed those doubts to overwhelm you to the point that you're not living a faithful life to Christ, or if they are threatening your faith, we too may need to respond. If you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and sing.